It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, live and running hot and true on this, the 10th day of August, 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to click on chat room and check into the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And if you jump in right now, early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky will all greet you. And you will, of course, be capably moderated by longtime and indefatigable inveterate veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third stage guild navigator, takes the months that have an R in them, that don't have an R in them, off. Because it's 106 degrees outside where Sparky is, so there won't be any space folding going on. No. Hi, I'm Bob, and it is the beginning of the second full week of August. There are 21 days remaining in the month, and just a quick weather warning. I've been reading for a while now about the, and God, how I hate this word, derecho, that is battering its way across the Midwest. Iowa and Nebraska have been hammered. The greater Chicagoland area is getting it now. It's moving eastward. It was a little more than 8 years and a month ago that one struck here, having just come across in the same pattern and wiped out power for 2 weeks plus for us. So I see the word derecho and I cringe. But if you are in the path of this thing as it moves eastward, please, please take precautions, because there's already a horrifying level of damage out of this thing. $450,000 homes and businesses are without power in Nebraska and Iowa alone. They've got wind gusts as high, it's a land hurricane. Wind gusts as high as 100 miles an hour, brings down large trees, causes structural damage. And I saw where our buddy Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org said tornadoes and straight-line winds were popping up all over the Chicago area and the burbs. The National Weather Service Storm Prediction Center did something they don't do very often. They put out a particularly dangerous situation, severe thunderstorm watch for eastern Iowa, northern Illinois, extreme northwest Indiana, and southern Wisconsin. and they said scattered significant gusts up to 100 mile an hour were likely. The warning went out to 7.8 million people. And photos showing up on social media of falling debris, bricks being blown off buildings, 2x4s driven through walls. It's scary. And just a little gnat sound shot through the doorway of some business. This might be an appropriate time to note that just because we're in the middle of a damnable pandemic, a dondemic, the Trump pandemic, nature still bats last. And this is one of those things that's a result of extreme high temperatures. And, well, yes, of course, our old friend, climate change. A little more sound. Those occasional thuds are debris striking this person's house. Yeah.
And there's bricks in the street, and there's a whole roof.
A roof blowing off in Iowa. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it's... The one that came through here 8 years and a month ago blew hell-bent for leather all the way from basically the same area. And at 100 miles an hour, it could, well, depending on the course it takes, it'll hit somewhere in this direction in fairly short order. Our forecast shows a chance of rain in the morning, so maybe it may go north of us, but for God's sakes, if you're in upstate New York or, you know, the greater Cleveland area, lower southern part of Michigan, try to be prepared. Might be a good time not to be on the highway. This thing has been strong enough to blow semi-tractor trailers over. Yeah, it's nothing to kid about. Take appropriate precautions. Thank you to Jeremy for getting us started this evening. Thank you very kindly. That means we're down below the regular $200 fundraising goal that we have every evening. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. So thanks go out, in addition to Jeremy, to our buddy Paul from Parts Unknown, to Judy, to Daniel, to Mary Bell, to Khalil. Thank you to Ralphs. Thank you very kindly to Brendan, to Dwayne, to Sue Fort Earth. Thank you to Marcia. Thank you to Nancy. Thank you all very kindly. Those are our over-the-weekend subscribers between the 8th, 9th. And, of course, today. Thank you very much. That means we got 195 to go to get, to get the week started off to a good running start. catching up with a little bit of information. Or a story that we were covering last week. In fact, Jude has let me know that she was there in Portland, women standing with the boots and the flowers. Jude notes it. Things are a little bit messy while the protests are taking place. But everything was all nice and cleaned up by Sunday morning. But in fact, the man who is using the cover of the First Amendment to try to kill people with his super spreader events, Sean Foyt, well, he did it again this weekend. Bunch of mask holes, and I mean a lot of them, gathered in Portland Saturday night. In the name of Jesus! At Cal Anderson Park. One individual said they counted all of two masks among hundreds of people. Sunday, Cal Anderson Park was in Seattle. So he's deliberately going to blue states, in an effort to get the disease going good there. And the thing is, public health officials were warned. I know because members of this community reached out and warned public health officials and government officials, and they did absolutely nothing. One of the news channels there in the Portland area published a story that contained the following. When asked about the lack of safety measures in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, people in attendance didn't have concerns. My faith is in God, not fear of COVID-19. I'm good. Most of us are just here for this and then we're leaving, so I don't think it's going to have an impact on Portland, but I don't know. I'm not a scientist. We're not big mask people, so it doesn't bother us. Oh. So the Rona, which has no actual consciousness and may or may not actually be a living thing, it's going to see that you're not wearing a mask and it won't bother you. God, what do you expect of people that believe that 13-year-old little girls have babies without ever having had sex? Jesus. And notice the one woman says, most of us are here just for this and then we're leaving. So they deliberately went there to spread the disease. They are, that is a confession. That is an admission. That is a statement against interest. That woman admits that she is a bioterrorist. And by the way, the whole thing comes out of a church in Redding, California. Bethel Church. Among other things, I guess this is sort of the... What was that Baptist church in Kansas? This is them for the second decade of the... Or the... Yeah. 21st century. Because there's some real Lulus. Bethel Church is there in Redding. I can't help wondering if maybe something that Bethel Church did last year might have been an inspiration for one of the plot lines of the Perry Mason series we were talking about on HBO. Because last year they prayed for the resurrection of a dead toddler. And of course, naturally, this church also runs a religion school in which demons and witches and evil spirits are very much Westboro. Thank you. Thank you. Scott in San Diego, Westboro Baptist. Yeah. Now, at the Bethel School of Supernatural Ministry, no, I'm not kidding, the children suck graves, also known as grave soaking, which I would think would be something that, you know, will eventually happen, say, at the final resting place of Donald J. Trump. The J stands for soaked. These bizarre people lay on the graves of dead Christians trying to suck out the goodness and the blessings of the dead. Yeah. And then they also try to walk through walls. Some people refer to that school as the Christian Hogwarts. Among other things, Sean Feucht recently went to the scene of the murder of George Floyd and crawled up on that dead man's back to preach his bizarre and twisted iteration of Christianity. Yeah, Scott and Steve both said, yeah, the Westboro Baptist. Oh, no. Ralp said, I'm looking at my weather app, Future Radar. It looks like it might go through Charleston, West Virginia. Oh, talking about the derecho. Oh, please, no. And Jude with a rock-solid point on Sean Feucht. Sean's no fear festivals would be a statement of his God's power to be present where weather is dangerous or not in sites where calm reflects sunshine. Yeah. That's right, Sean. Go. You'll notice he doesn't hold any of his super spreader events in places where it is known that the coronavirus is ravaging. You know. And so one wonders. Of course, we don't really have sufficient contact tracing. But one wonders if one were able to trace an outback back to Sean Feucht and his deliberate, malignant, willful, wanton, and reckless behavior, could one sue him? And his church? Or would they run and hide behind the lace skirts of the First Amendment? Like they most always do. Re-soaking Trump's grave. You don't mind if it passes through my kidneys first, do you? Asks Scott in San Diego. No, I think that was kind of the idea. So Sean Feucht is going to go ahead and continue being a bioterrorist and taking his bioterrorist attacks all over the country. Because, in fact, if devils there be, he is a devil. As the friendly atheist put it in regard to Sean Feucht, he'll tell you this is about God, but he'll be gone long before the COVID symptoms start affecting the people attending these concerts. The only thing he'll have to offer anyone is prayer. It won't heal them, and it won't pay any medical bills. And no one is apparently willing to even try to stop him. Because one of the most potent forces in the universe is a whiny evangelical. We've got to worship! Yeah, well, Vol's getting hungry, and Vol needs to be fed, too. Unfortunately, the Enterprise isn't orbiting and can't, you know, zap him with the phasers. If they want benefits from the dead, Lee in New York says, don't grave walk. Wait for it. Walk like an Egyptian. Walk like an Egyptian. Yeah. Ron in Raleigh says, holy moly, these folks certainly believe some outrageous horse shit, don't they? These are the folks that want to run the country. What's funny is they believe themselves to be sane, and we're the crazy ones. Well, we're not just crazy, Ron. We're infidels and deserve to die. Unless, you know, we convert at the point of their gun or their sword or their virus. Yeah. Yeah, Robert up near Morgantown says 112-mile-an-hour winds in Iowa. Oh, mercy. And there's not much you can do. Try to make yourself safe, but that's about it. In fact, I don't know if I hollered at Agnes to tell her about this because she'll get on her. She's quite the weather fanatic, but she probably needs to know this is coming. Stand by. I'll be right back. I just want to make sure she knows. Well, I'm glad I did that because Agnes, in fact, had not seen the news of it. Don't fool with these things. Oh, and had this note to get the program started this evening. Thursday, August 6th, we discussed Truman dropping the atomic bomb on Japan in attempts to demonstrate to Russia and Joe Stalin just how much military might the United States possessed back in the mid-40s. I will never forget my Pan-African Studies class professor reminding me over and over again that we were the only country to drop a nuclear weapon on another country. If he said it once, he said it a dozen times over the course of the semester. And, of course, as Bob mentioned on Thursday on the Horn, we dropped a second bomb on Nagasaki just days later. In the words of my professor, Dr. Dorsey, shame on the United States of America. However, sandwiched between the 6th and the 9th of August in the history of this country were also two significantly negative days in their respective years. Leading up to the Vietnam War, on the 7th of August, 1964, Lyndon Baines Johnson, along with Congress, invoked the Gulf of Tonkin Act, which appeared to be nothing more than a show of military force for the Johnson administration leading up to the presidential election of 1964, similar to the Bush administration creating phony intelligence with weapons of mass destruction to launch the war in Iraq. We lost at least 59,000 men in that needless conflict, which in the end saw the North Vietnamese claiming Saigon and conquering the South Vietnamese. Then, exactly 10 years later, on the 8th of August, 1974, Richard Nixon would resign as president, all the while claiming, "I'm not a crook, Henry. It's all those Jews' fault, Henry. It's the Jews." As an editorial note, I wonder if Nixon even realized that the war criminal Henry Kissinger was Jewish. Yes, Richard Nixon was a full-blown criminal, unlike Bill Clinton, who was not a criminal, but just fully blown. Oh, dear. Nixon and his henchmen interrupted a peace treaty that was in progress via President Johnson just months prior to the 68 presidential elections. It was an act of treason, I will add. Nixon and Henry Kissinger disrupted the peace treaty of the Johnson administration, effectively committing treason against this country with their interference in Johnson's pending agreement with the North Vietnamese. This would allow Nixon to become president, but the war raged on with Nixon having no better imminent deal, as he had contended, and thousands more Americans died. The rest is history, as the North Vietnamese claimed Saigon and all of South Vietnam, ironically naming the whole country the Socialist Republic of Vietnam. Speaking of socialists, had one of the greatest socialists of all time, FDR's Vice President Henry Wallace, become president, as he should have, neither one or of the two atomic bombs likely would have been dropped on Japan. Would Wallace have sent troops into Korea or just let North and South Korea become one country called the Socialist Republic of Korea? Maybe the United States would have become a truly socialist state and we'd have a single-payer system just like South Korea has today. However, just as the corporate fascists did to Bernie Sanders this past spring when Sanders appeared to be on his way to winning the nomination, so did the corporate fascists of the 40s install Harry Truman instead of Henry Wallace. It's been Joey's Journal for Monday, the 10th day of August, with Giraffe being blown by the wind as he sticks his head out of the sunroof of his recently acquired Honda SUV. Tell Giraffe he may get a stiff neck out of it, but to pull his neck in, because that wind he's in right now is like about to get a whole lot worse if it goes your way. Or comes your way. Mm-hmm. And, well, in the final analysis, Bernie, I don't think comparing Bernie to Henry Wallace is a particularly apt comparison, simply because Bernie was not already in an office, you know, like the vice presidency. And in point of fact, he had a great big movement behind him, but he just couldn't quite get them to go out and vote. And that's what putting your eggs in the youth vote basket often results in. Yes, Stephen New York pointing out with regard to Sean Foyt, and it's old tax free. Hallelujah. Steve adding, 59,000 men and women dead. Pshaw, dear leader Kim Jong-un has killed almost three times that. I guess at least he's committing the deaths at home. That was the first thing I thought of when I saw Joey refer to the death toll from Vietnam, the American death toll. The Vietnamese death toll, of course, was well north of a million.
So that sort of has to be taken into account. By all means, let's check in on that other super spreader event around the country, or one of the other super spreader events around the country. I'm talking, of course, about Sturgis, South Dakota. Oh, what a weekend it's been for the 10-day festival. Gosh, if only you were in Sturgis, you could have seen Smash Mouth play last night. Or Nickelback wasn't there. Doggone it. But the front man for Smash Mouth got up on the stage. His name's Steve Harwell. And he said, "We're all together here tonight. Fuck that COVID shit." Yeah, because that's an effective remedy against transmission of the virus. Screaming "fuck that COVID shit" at your audience of super spreaders. Oh, not since Woodstock has there been a lineup such as they had in Sturgis, or are having. Yesterday it was Smash Mouth. Gosh, Trapped. Buck Cherry, Drowning Pool, Night Ranger. Wow, there's one I haven't heard in a while. Reverend Horton Heat, Lit, 38 Special. One wonders which iteration. Quiet Riot and Big Skillet are all playing Sturgis this summer. Hoo-wee! That is a veritable K-Tel record album of faded rock and roll half talents. Well, I just read it to you there. No, I guess they weren't there. Billable Rick said, "I don't care about Smash Mouth. What I want to know is, did Great White play in Sturgis?" No, I figured they probably thought that Great White, given the makeup of the crowd, was already overrepresented. Ah, see what I did there? The organizers did encourage attendees to follow CDC pandemic guidelines, and they said there'd be hand sanitizer readily available throughout the park. And they said you'll have to have a mask to get in. But when it came time for folks to come in, photographs on social media made it abundantly clear that these selfish assholes had absolutely no interest whatsoever in trying to protect themselves or anyone else. Not a mask in sight. And Saturday night, the rapper Tech N9ne played a packed house at Regalia Hotel and Conference Center in Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri. Because, well, you know, fuck that COVID shit! Steve from Georgistan says, "I suppose Judas Priest wasn't available."
Breaking the law, getting the sick. Getting the bug.
And no. A 1,000 people at that concert in Lake of the Ozarks, Missouri. Ay, ay, ay. Stupid people. But so far, the Sturgis rally is a huge success. 84 arrests reported, 226 citations, and 18 motorcycle crashes, all in the space of just 24 hours. And again, no masks in sight. Well, I guess the upside is if you've ever wanted a bike, there's going to be a bunch of them for sale fairly soon, I imagine. Might be some bargains in there. Ron and Raleigh, subject line Sturgis. I still haven't seen any black folks in Sturgis. How about Coldplay? Nope, not there. Couldn't afford them, I guess. I mean, when you're, you know, Buck Cherry, and it probably takes a little extra to get the boys from 38 Special on stage. I mean, they're kind of getting up there. Scott in San Diego says, okay, so the Z-List talent lineup at Sturgis sucked Fred Trump's dead dick. Great band name, Fred Trump's dead dick. All attendees did receive a complimentary Trump-Pence 2020 toe tag. Well played. Smash Mouth, Lee reminds us of their the greatness of their poetry. I ain't the sharpest tool in the shed. She was looking kind of dumb with her finger and her thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Be kind of neat if we could rewrite that to make a reference to the Rona. Don't strain anything. And it being Moran Monday and all, let's take a moment to check in with anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz. Oh, that's true. That's true. Randy in PA says, you'll have to disinfect the bikes before you buy them. Oh, I think I'd just get a couple of jars of those Clorox wipes and get busy. Wipe everything down. Yeah, they'd probably be selling the motorcycle suits, too, but I wouldn't buy them, just the bike. Corona Fest at Sturgis, Billable Rick says, is there any way that we can have a contest on the horn to send some of our listeners to Sturgis? Or maybe not. The only redeeming feature of the Sturgis Festival is that most attendees are Trumpansies, which may reduce the Trump vote. But as we all know, this virus doesn't differentiate between maggots and good Americans. So the latter population will invariably return to their homes and infect the latter group in spades. Yeah, and I saw a story coming out of L.A. the other day, Billable, about how the mayor there has authorized the utilities departments to cut off power and water to these massive mansions in the Hollywood Hills that are being rented out for huge house parties. Basically speakeasies for the modern age. An event organizer will rent a house for a weekend for $10,000 and then sell tickets and make five times that much. Have an open bar and, you know, people wandering around the house. And so now, because it's in complete violation of every rule about trying to contain the virus, and now when one of these super spreader events is announced or located or discovered, the electric company is supposed to go and turn off the power and the water. The fuck? Capitalism.
Well, we can't have any bars, dude. We're just having a house party.
Oh, you're having a super spreader event. I'd be curious to know if this is having any effect, Billable, or anybody else in the greater L.A. area. No, back to Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. He being a maggot with no self-respect whatsoever. I mean, it amazes me that a man will let somebody like Donald Trump, a man who claims to be a Texan, no less, will let a man like Donald Trump trash his wife and his creepy aging daddy and just say, ho-hum, check still clearing. Right. So he has no moral core, no ethical center. Cruz doesn't. And therefore, among the maggots, he really doesn't give a good goddamn, like the rest of the maggots, doesn't give a good goddamn what happens to his constituents during this public health and economic crisis, the one following from the other. Because make no mistake, Texans are suffering. And suffering mightily in the single most uninsured population in the United States. Period. Other people are trying to get something done in the Senate. Remember, and I saw this happen over the weekend on social media, so I had to jump in on this. Somebody said, somebody tell Nancy Pelosi to get with it and get some help to America. And I just, you know, old friend. And I just popped in for a second and said, if you want to shake somebody till their teeth rattle, the person you need to be shaking is chinless Mitch McConnell. The worst thing ever to come out of Sheffield, Alabama in its entire history. Because remember, the House passed its bill in May. June, July. Now we're in August. The House passed its bill with plenty of time to get relief to Americans before things like the extension of unemployment ran out. But Mitch McConnell chose not to act because Mitch McConnell is part of a death cult. I was reflecting over the course of the weekend about two lines from his inaugural address, if we can call it that. The one line that caught everyone's attention back on January the 20th, 2017, was Nitwit Nero's reference to American carnage. But the phrase that caught my pink little ear was,
"We all bleed." We all bleed red, white, and blue for the flag, for America.
So, American carnage and we all bleed. And it turns out that was actually a promise, not a metaphorical figure of speech. Yeah. So, anyway, back to Ted Cruz. The Republicans don't think anybody needs any more, Americans need any more support. And that is directly contrary to what the decent members of the Senate are doing, the Democrats. Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts tweeted earlier, "Give every person in our country $2,000 a month for the duration of the pandemic, $2,000 a month for the 3 months after that, and $2,000 a month retroactive to March. $2,000. It's not a huge sum of money, but it will keep people from absolute desperation. And frankly, when you compare costs of living, $2,000 a month for Ed Markey's constituents is a lot less money than $2,000 a month for Ted's constituents in Texas. But it's a pretty simple idea, and I don't know about you, but it works. I think it would help. Give every person in our country $2,000 a month for the duration of the pandemic, $2,000 a month for 3 months after that, and $2,000 a month retroactive to March. Is that just, that was just too much for Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America. Since Ted is a master debater, he immediately subtweeted Senator Markey and said,
"Why be so cheap? Give everyone $1 million a day, every day, forever, and 3 soy lattes a day, and a foot massage. We have magic money. We have a magic money tree. We should use it."
There really is only one response to that kind of shitty snark. Just one.
You dick!
Yeah. Ted Cruz, colossal dick. It's kind of a paradox, really. It probably has something to do with post-Einsteinian physics that Ted, it's like Schrodinger's cat in a way. Ted Cruz is a colossal dick and a pencil dick, needle dick at the same time. Takes several blackboards to sort out the equation for that, but it's true.
Why be so cheap? Give everyone $1 million a day, every day, forever, and 3 soy lattes a day, and a foot massage. We have a magic money tree. We should use it.
Funny, he wasn't saying that when they were passing the tax cuts for the billionaires, the trillion-dollar hole in the ground that we threw money into. David in South Carolina, Stan, pointing out takers. Today, Moscow Mitch said there will be no bill because Dems just want to waste money bailing out blue states who mismanaged budgets for years. Kentucky and all the rest of the Confederacy are their true takers and depend on those blue states for survival. Shit's going to get real. Real quick. When the welfare states, your Alabamas, your Tennessees, your Kentuckys, your Mississippis, all the southern states, they all take more than they pay in. And when the ability of the blue states to do that begins to be affected, well, there will be weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. But that's okay, because then Chinless Mitch will just refer to the states that carry his state's dead ass as a bunch of slackers who won't carry their weight by carrying them. Ed Markey. Well, Cruz pissed him off with that shitty little bit of sophomoric sarcasm.
We have a magic money tree. We should use it.
Markey subtweeted him in rather a surprising display for a senator. It's not a goddamn joke, Ted. Millions of families are facing hunger, the threat of eviction, and the loss of their health care during a pandemic that's worsening every day. Get real. He should have made it get real, comma, you, and then use the eggplant emoji. Because that's the universal social media symbol for dick. Get real, you dick. And maybe it's not a goddamn joke, comma, Raphaelito. Not Ted. And what continues to simply baffle me is how there can be enough people in this country who are so self-loathing that they have allowed Republicans to remain in any position of power whatsoever when it is abundantly apparent that the Republican Party hates their goddamn guts. I'm no psychologist, but there's got to be a term for that. And I don't know what it is. Now, in certain communities, for instance, if a Jewish person criticizes Israel, there will be an entire chorus of people screaming back at them that they are self-hating Jews. And self-hating is a term that, log cabin Republicans, those are self-hating gay people. Diamond and silk, or paste and polyester, or mold and mildew, as they've become known, those are some self-hating black women. But in each of those categories, there's a sort of demographic niche. How do you quantify even? American citizens who would rather be evicted, live on the streets, than vote for people who would like for them not to have to do that. I'm having a hell of a time sorting that out. Uh-oh, we're back to grave soaking. Dustin with a note. Grave soaking. I'm reminded of a song called Dead Girls by a gentleman named Voltaire. I'll have to check that out later. Yeah, Stephen, New York. Diamond and silk. Just thought of another one. Aspirin and sucrates. On a more serious note, I think it's more accurate to call a person a self-loathing something or other. Well, it's kind of like the mask controversy, the mask non-troversy. There are people who refuse to wear masks in this country now, who refuse to do so simply because they don't give a fuck about anyone else. They have deep and abiding problems with the fundamental act of being a human being. Stockholm Syndrome, asks Lee in New York. Is that the term? Possibly. Brother Deacon Asa says, I have a theory on why the repigfuckers are holding out on the money. I think they figure they're almost certainly going to lose control in November, so they want the economy fucked to the maximum for the next administration. Just my two cents. I think there's truth in that. Make the misery. Well, I mean, it's typical Washington strategery. You let the people suffer, and then you blame the suffering of the people on your political opponent, because you know that between the multimillionaire for-profit media and social media, that your message will probably be amplified and the lie will get around the world before the truth can get its shoes on. But the fact of the matter is, and it is a fact, Nancy Pelosi and the House did their damn job. They passed a bill and they sent it over with more than 400 others in this Congress, where it is laying in a pool of dust and blood on Mitch McConnell's desk. I mean, what a shitty, miserable human being Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, is. The difference between $2,000 a month and $1 million a month, if my ciphering is anywhere near correct, is $998,000. But in Rafaelito's Christian worldview, because remember, he's a big Christian. In his Christian worldview, $2,000 is the same as $1 million. And let's do, there it is. David in South Carolina, Stan. The word for the political phenomenon is sadopopulism. Son of a gun, that looks like that's right. Well, I learned something new today. Sadopopulism. Whoa, breaking news. Robert in Morgantown. And Robert's pretty much on top of things. Let me look at see if I can find something on this. I'm not seeing anything popping yet. Robert, what was your source on that? Urgent, Trump pulled from briefing room, talk of shots fired at near White House, White House on lockdown. It's most curious. Let's see if any of the networks have anything on it. Yeah, it looks like.
There's a lockdown inside the briefing room. And I'm so sorry. The control room says we've got someone on the phone, but I didn't catch who it was. Carol, you're on the phone with us. Are you in the briefing room there? And can you give us any insight into what's happened?
Yes, I am in the briefing room. Casey, the president was in the middle of briefing. A Secret Service agent came and got his attention and said that, and he needed to go, and now he is coming back, we are told. They just announced overhead that he's returning to the briefing room. But the White House has been on lockdown. We've been in the briefing room since this happened, trying to figure out exactly what's going on. There's a lot of activity outside. And there's an agent now posted outside of the briefing room, but the president, is our understanding, is heading back into the briefing room now.
So if he's coming back in, I mean, that would obviously suggest that perhaps either the threat itself is no longer a threat, or perhaps the president assessed that he wishes to come back anyway. Do you think this is a scenario where they would allow him to come back if there was still something outstanding after pulling him away like that?
It seems like that would be unlikely, just given the way they came in and the agent came in and told the president that he had to leave the briefing room. That so it would seem stand a reason that he wouldn't be brought back into the briefing room. The Secret Service wouldn't clear him to do that unless they felt that whatever the situation was under control.
Carol, what can you tell us about the mood in the room and among the president's aides? I mean, is there a sense of alarm? Is there a sense of relative calm? What's it like there?
So actually, all of the aides who had come out with the president, including Secretary Mnuchin of the Treasury, left. We are just here as reporters who are here in the briefing room. There's a stenographer who usually sits to the side of the podium and is recording whatever the president is saying so that they can type it up for a transcript. She had left, and she just also returned here to the briefing room. But right now, there are not. Oh, here's the president.
Oh, goody.
Here we are waiting for the president. That was an interesting end to the hour. And MSNBC News breaking news coverage is going to continue with Ari Melber after
we hear
from the president.
Sorry for that. There was a shooting outside of the White House and seems to be very well under control. I'd like to thank the Secret Service for doing their always quick and very effective work. But there was an actual shooting and somebody's been taken to the hospital. I don't know the condition of the person. It seems that the person.
Yeah, we'll. Well, it was. I thought C-SPAN would have it, but C-SPAN doesn't. So we'll just check in via that feed. Yet, naturally, what he didn't announce is that he was only gone long enough to change his shorts.
Is a threat towards you, sir?
We don't know yet. We don't know. They're going to find
out. Do you know if the individual said anything, sir? Mentioned your name, anything like that?
We don't know that yet.
It was the Secret Service that did shoot this.
It seems to be, yeah.
It seems to be.
Where were you taken, Mr. President? Were you taken to the bunker?
No, we're taken just out over to the Oval Office. Just told me when he came up, you pretty much saw it like I did. He said, sir, could you please come with me? So you were surprised. I was surprised also. I think it's probably pretty unusual. But very, very professional people. They do a fantastic job.
Steve in New York pointing out, feel free to call me fucking crazy, but I think this is complete bullshit. I'll bet the shooter will be from Antifa. I will not take that bet.
Hospital. I can't tell you the condition of the suspect. There was nobody else injured. There was no other law enforcement injured. And I just want to, I will get on to the press conference, but I do want to thank Secret Service. They are fantastic. The job they do. From what I understand, the answer is yes.
He was armed, Mr. President?
That's what I understand. I don't know. You'll have to ask them.
What type of weapon?
I don't know that, no.
Email, so
I don't know. You'll have to get there. They'll have a detailed, maybe a briefing for you.
Wow, for President of the United States, they sure didn't tell him much, did they?
I don't know. I didn't ask that question.
Or maybe they're still working on the story.
It might not have had anything to do with me. It might have been something else. But it was on the outside of the premises. The wall, as you know, the fencing, especially the new fencing that they put up, is very powerful. But it was on the outside of the White House.
Okay? Powerful?
And they'll have a full report. Secret Service, in a little while, will have a full report.
Are you rattled by this at all, Mr. President?
I don't know. Do I seem rattled? It's unfortunate that this is a world, but the world's always been.
It's unfortunate that this is a world.
It's not something that's unique. The world has been. You look back over the centuries, the world has been a dangerous place, very dangerous place, and. It will continue, I guess, for a period of time.
Does this make you think differently about your personal safety inside the White House?
No, I feel very safe with the Secret Service. They're fantastic people. They're the best of the best, and they're highly trained.
Best of the best of the best, sir. He doesn't even know what we're here for. Dave in South Carolina, Stan. Drama, media laps it up. Shiny objects. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh simply noting, false flag, false flag, false flag. Yeah, somebody get Alex Jones on the blower.
In this area,
Why did you decide after that, because obviously it created a lot of commotion, what made you decide to come back and continue the briefing?
Well, I didn't even think about not coming back. I said, am I able to go back? And they said, you'd have to wait a little while. I waited a little while, as you know, in the Oval Office area. And I said, can I get back now? And
they Oval said, Office yes. area.
And they have
men's room off the Oval Office. The little president's room. Case,
but it was one person.
Okay. You said the shooting was outside. How far away from the White House?
Are they going to be giving you a full briefing in a little while?
The White House, or was it right?
I can only tell you they're going to give you a briefing. It was outside of the premises. Near the fence, but outside of the premises.
Pretty close.
So I was telling you that the Dow Jones and the S&P 500 are now 50% above the March level. NASDAQ is setting new records. It's already broken the record despite the situation of having the China virus. We have new jobs are rising and unemployment is falling faster than nearly anyone thought. And over the past 3 months, we've created over 9 million jobs. And that's a record, a three-month record. If you add it up, it's a three-month record by far. And we've beaten expectations by 12 million, or 12 million above expectations, which is pretty remarkable. Today, we had great reports on new job openings. And there's clearly a housing boom, which has been incredible numbers in both housing and an automobile boom.
Incredible.
We've rarely seen anything like it, and it's going on right now in America. Inventories are at rock bottom. Used car sales are at record levels. And we will have rebuilt. We're doing a rebuilding like nobody's ever seen. It's a big plus for manufacturing and construction. So construction's getting close to record territory. Manufacturing's doing very well. The car companies are doing great. Very happy for Michigan, the state of Michigan. We have a lot of car companies moving in. A lot of plants are being built and expanded in Michigan and Ohio. There is no reason why the economy can't grow at a 20% pace in the third quarter. That would be a record. And interestingly, it'll be a number that's going to be announced before November 3rd.
It'll be a number.
It's announced probably around November 1st, which is very interesting. But it's going to grow at a very substantial pace based on all of the numbers we're looking at, and probably a lot more substantial than we originally thought. We're creating new incentives for work and jobs, and we're also providing much-needed assistance to those who are still suffering from the effects of the pandemic contraction. And the contraction is now, we have the pandemic. We have a lot of great things happening in terms of the vaccines and therapeutics, as you know. And I think we'll be making tremendous progress over the next period of a few months, and certainly before the end of the year. I think we'll have a vaccine before the end of the year, very substantially, and we may have a therapeutic resolvement very quickly, very, very quickly.
Resolvement?
Frankly, that's the one I'd rather have faster, because you'd go in, you'd give a transfusion or a shot to people that are very ill.
A transfusion.
You'd be able to come out of the hospital the next day or a few days later.
Wonder why that's the notion would pop into his
participate in our core-sharing unemployment plan. We are going to be doing something very, very interesting with all of the things that we announced on Saturday. I don't have to repeat what they are. You know very well. And we've had some tremendous success already. If you look at what's happening with the stock market, and people are very thrilled at what we're doing. We'd like to get the Democrats to focus on other than what they're focusing on, which is a bailout of poorly running states. We have many great running states, states that are setting records, and let's see what happens with respect to that. But we're looking at also considering a capital gains tax cut, which would create a lot more jobs. So we're looking very seriously at a capital gains tax cut, and also at an income tax cut for middle-income families. We're looking at expanding the tax cuts that we've already done, but specifically for middle-income families, and you'll be hearing about that in the upcoming few weeks, and I think it'll be very exciting. So a capital gains tax is going to be a lot of people put to work, and it would be a cut in the capital gains tax and also a cut in the middle income tax. So I now want to just discuss a little quick brief, and then we'll take a few more questions. But we took some. Who would have known we were going to take questions before we started, right? Is that right, Jennifer? But that's the way it happens sometimes. We want to discuss, if we might, the China virus, and the world continues its fight against this horrible plague.
Oh, and Silent R. Lamar says, help me please, Brother Bob. Can you name some poorly run blue states? I live in California. Well, here, let me help. A poorly run state in amongst the shrieking and squalling of the spirochetes that swim around in that thin gray soup that used to maybe be his brain. A poorly run state is any state run by a Democratic governor or a Democratic governor in conjunction with a Democratic legislature. That's a poorly run state. The thugocracies of places like Alabama and Georgia, Mississippi, those are well-run states.
Where they're doing great. They're doing great.
Same with Texas. Again, as noted earlier, the state with the largest uninsured population in the entire country. So, Silent R, I hope that helps. Angelo, writing from the People's Republic of the Bronx, says, is he kidding? Here's a headline from the Salt Lake Tribune. U.S. economy contracts 33% in record-shattering decline, revealing coronavirus toll. He's trying to put on a happy face on a straight-up fuster cluck brought on by his incompetence. Absolutely. Steve noting, and the chocolate ration just increased from 4 ounces to 3 ounces. Thank you, big brother. Yeah, sweet Jeebus. Ron in Raleigh says, please make it stop or else I'll have to mute. I'm dying here. And those great running states still getting more from the Fed than they send. Another fucking capital gains tax cut might as well abolish the fucking thing. Ultimately, that's the goal. And a reminder, the payroll tax cut affects no one who isn't working. And again, as I tried to explain, there's nothing that says the employer has to give the 7.5% back to the employee. They can just sit on it and their 7.5% contribution in anticipation of the day that the bill comes due. But this is an important conversation to be having. Because over the weekend, you know, he had a shit show Friday night, and then he had a shit show Saturday. And in the Saturday shit show, he explained that if he gets reelected, he intends to fully eliminate the payroll tax, the 7.5% that supports Social Security and Medicare, and the 7.5% contribution by the employer. He said the quiet part out loud again. I intend to kill Social Security. I intend to finally fulfill the promise of generations of Republican lawmakers. And end Social Security and take those monies back from those no-good money-grubbing oldsters and disabled people. He said it. He said it. And the number of people who understand that in this country is painfully, woefully low. Steve pointing out, it's a tax holiday at best. That means that we all have to pay it back eventually without congressional action. I told my employer to keep collecting it for me, because I don't want a huge tax bill at the end. Smart.
Lou pointing out, I want my state to secede. And that's, in California, that's understandable. Silent R. Lamar says, oh, well, the Trump administration reminds me of a cow shit with a pair of googly eyes. Well, there's a visual for the dinner hour. Silent R. Lamar deciding to take a run at dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. Steve in New York says, I, for one, am sick of old people eating and not being homeless. As to well-run states, Lee establishes a scale. Isn't it on a scale? 1, you have a brain. 10, you want to rename yourself and at least one child Donald Trump. Add to that, you also want him on Mount Rushmore. Because that came out over the weekend, too. He really and for truly thinks he deserves to be on Mount Rushmore. And, you know, you'll probably hate me for saying this, but there's a certain amount of logic to it. Because Mount Rushmore was designed by a white supremacist. And like recognizes like. I don't know, says Darlene in Connecticut. Trump sounded doped up to me. They medicated the bastard to get him through this so-called shooting. On the flip side, I'm with Steve. Sort of think this is a scam to engender sympathy. I would put nothing past... Look, the fish rots from the head. And so everything that is in his control is corrupted at this point, up to and including the Secret Service. You remember the Secret Service. They were the ones who gave Barack Obama the Secret Service nickname, codename Renegade. I remember when that happened. Renegade, the Styx song about a man being hanged. Yeah. Makes perfect sense to me. Ron and Raleigh says David Dayan was on Sam Cedar's program today. He believes that employers will put the money in escrow, draw interest, and then pay the bill when it comes due. The workers get doodly squat. Then Social Security will be gone. And the dream of generations of Republicans will have been fulfilled. They screamed and screeched and squalled and cried when Social Security became law. And they did the same thing over Medicare. And it has been the Republican fetish object to rid this country of both of those programs and the people who rely on them for generations. Further proof that Donald Trump is a really nasty symptom of a larger disease called GOP. He is not the disease itself. Raubs is still tracking the derecho. Oh, dear. Who had a Lake Michigan tsunami on their 2020 bingo card? With a photograph, the derecho is about to blast across Lake Michigan and could cause a phenomenon known as a meteo tsunami. Well, that's fantastic. 2020. Hold my beer. So now it's heading across Lake Michigan. This is worry-inducing. Really worry-inducing. Oh, I'm sorry, Ron, but we're just going to check in and see what the latest babble is.
the virus and instead be united in our condemnation of how this virus came to America, how this virus came to the world.
From Europe?
And we're going to figure it out, and we're going to find out. And we're very angry about it. On the therapeutics and vaccine updates, three vaccine candidates are currently in phase three clinical trials, something that would have been impossible under the previous administration or any other administration.
When it didn't exist.
And several others are showing considerable promise. We have great companies, very well-known companies. I think everyone in this room would know these companies, but they're the biggest and the best in the world. And we're working with other foreign companies and countries that have been really working very closely with us. We're trading. We're not looking to do anything but come up with the answer, and we really don't. We don't care. We want to come up with the answer.
We have been listening here to the president giving.
Yep, they're cutting away, too, because babbling.
And we're very angry, the China virus.
Jesus. Steve in Georgistan says, I would add that Nitwit Nero knows that his executive orders will not pass constitutional muster, hence the shiny keys. And now they're replaying him fleeing from the podium. Because, of course. Steve says, I could see adding him to Stone Mountain. You know, among those racists. MSNBC cut away from his babbling once he got it and started getting into the nice racist part of it, but... Well, CNN still got it going. Ugh, we'll leave it be. Hey, we're almost to the halfway point of the program this evening. Got $195 in fundraising to do for the evening. Not a lot. We don't have some gigantic hole. Thanks, everybody, for the community-made miracle of last week. Thank you so much. And if you'd like to help, the interface is over at headon.live. We always need new subscribers. That'd be nice. Let's check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I wouldn't. I mean, I looked at the video. I mean, my video screen is just as good as your video screen. I wouldn't say Trump rushed off of the briefing platform.
Well, he can't rush anywhere. I just said he fled.
He fled. Well, yeah. I've seen, you know, when it rains, you go out the next morning and the sidewalk is still wet and you'll see either a trail of slime or a slug with a trail of slime navigating across the sidewalk.
Yes.
That's about the pace that Trump travels at, flees at. Jesus, if I were on speaking terms with my younger brother who was in the Secret Service, I would call him, because he's not only a gun nut, he's not only a Mark Levin listening zombie.
Oh, and remind me, I have a Mark Levin story.
Okay, I'll put my thumb in to serve as the bookmark. But not only is he a gun nut and a Mark Levin groupie, okay, but he and a retired Secret Service guy after 25 years, but he also down in Florida has a bunch of scanners, police scanners, and somehow or another he can listen to police scanning channels that most of us are not aware of. So you know he's on the edge of his chair. He's probably got a little boner. I don't mean to ruin dinner for anybody, as he sits there, because he loves that shit. I mean, just absolutely lives, to listen to the police scanners, because he wants to know, by God, exactly what's going on. Well, hell, we know that because he listens to Mark Levin, you know, the epitome of great information. Jesus, it's almost worth breaking my silence and his by calling him. You want me to call him and get him to do it?
No, let's don't say we didn't.
Okay, all right, I won't do it. I just want to revisit something that I brought up on the front porch the other day. This is going to be my new mantra between now and Election Day. Chances are, no matter where you are, you're going to be voting by mail this time around. I mean, we've been doing it out here in California for years, and some other states have been doing it as a matter of course. There's a couple of states, I think, that are already all by mail voting, if I'm not mistaken. But here's the deal. Eventually, your ballot is going to show up. Within 24 hours of its arrival, fill it out and hand deliver it. Look it up in the phone book or online, the physical location for your registrar of voters or your local place where voters are delivered and counted on election night. Because the sooner we get our ballots in, those are tallied first and held back, the results, obviously, until election night. So to the extent that we can be ahead of the game, I think we're going to be better off. He'll still try to fuck up the how the vote is perceived. Because a lot of these morons in red states, where they may not have, I mean, there may be pockets where they won't do by mail voting, and those valid votes are counted first. So we need to be counted in advance of election night. Do you get what I mean? I mean, it's that important, because they're going to try to fuck it up any way they can. We're what, 84 days away from election day, and it's a wonder he doesn't change his shorts several times a day, because on some level, it's like Red Fox said, when you can read the handwriting on the wall, you're in the toilet. And I don't care how much denial he could be in on his best day, he still knows that his days in office are numbered. I mean, look at the shit that he's trying to pull between now and that eventual moment when he's escorted out of there. So anyway, that's my little mantra. Vote early and vote often, as they used to say in Chicago. But no, I'm serious. Definitely. When your ballot arrives within 24 hours,
get it done, get it gone.
Deliver it. Exactly. Exactly. So how are you? Did you have a good weekend?
It was a lovely weekend here. It was really nice and warm, and got to play around outside a little bit. And yeah, it was.
Did you cook? Did you grill? Did you barbecue?
Nothing fancy this time through. You know, just a little light stuff. You know, some chicken, some burgers.
Yeah, you know what I've been hungry for recently?
What's that?
Lamb chops. Have you ever cooked lamb chops on the?
No, I had to be brutally honest. I'm not that big of a fan of lamb. Just because I don't like I don't like that gamey taste.
Yeah, but once every 20 years, I'll grill up, cook up some lamb chops.
Now I do like goat. Goat is milder than lamb.
Goat.
Yeah.
I've never heard of eating goat.
Oh, you're kidding.
I mean, unless you're another goat, you know, on a date or something. I don't know. No, really, seriously, where do you get it? Where do you?
I don't. It's hard to come by. I mean, you can get it. You can get it. I imagine you wouldn't have any problem getting it there.
In other words, I could get my own goat.
No. At a meat market, goat.
Oh, all right.
You're bound to have some big. You're bound to have some big fresh foods market in San Diego.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
And given
well.
I mean, goat's big in the Caribbean, Mexico, you know. You could probably find it.
I have no idea.
And it really is delicious.
I have no idea. Goat, the other meat. And where's Robert Mitchum when we need him most, you know?
Goat, was that Bob Mitchum?
For dinner. Goat, it's what's for dinner. Yeah, he was the original spokesman for the Beef Council.
Stephen New York says, where to get goat? Usually at halal delis.
Ah, okay. I don't even know if we've got those here. We've got a couple of
delis. Oh, I'm pretty sure you do. You're a big city.
We have got a deli out here, and I don't know why I don't go there more often. I'm sure their dining room is closed, what with the pandemic and stuff. But, man, you can get a hot pastrami sandwich that's 4 inches high. I'm telling you, a big old bowl of matzo ball soup.
Well, the benchmark gold standard for all corned beef sandwiches in the United States, and anybody from the general Cleveland area is already yelling the name. I know Joey probably is. The benchmark gold standard for a corned beef sandwich in the United States is a place called Slimans in Cleveland.
I think I've heard of it.
And it is it's that thin sliced deli rye with a schmear of good mustard and 6 inches of razor-thin sliced fresh corned beef out of the oven.
Oh, mercy. Before I left the D.C. area, I used to go to a deli in Alexandria. It may still be there at the corner of King Street and West. If it's still there, that's where it would probably be. But it is said that when Nelson Rockefeller was being confirmed to take the vice presidency under the Ford administration, that he would send his people out to this place. Initially, it was known as Rosenick's, and then they moved and became Terlitzky's. But he would send out, because it was like authentic New York delicatessen. Oh, man, I've got to get up.
There's another nice deli to the toward the, it's one of the side streets down off of the toward Virginia side the White House, and that's a great classic Jewish deli. I got some delicious ice cold borscht with sour cream in there one day. It was wonderful. All right, it's on the side, you know, the side where the old executive office building is, the Adams family looking building.
Yeah.
Yeah, that side. A couple of blocks down. And absolutely.
On Pennsylvania or one of the side?
No, streets? One of the side streets.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, the great corned beef discussion is now on.
All right.
Au contraire, mon frère, says Stephen New York. I think Katz's or Second Avenue Deli's the gold standard. I've had both. And Katz's is revered and legendary, and send a salami to your boy in the army. And, you know, it only rhymes if you say it New York style. Send a salami to your boy in the army. otherwise, it just looks weird. But I've had Katz's, and I've had Slimans in Cleveland, and Slimans, well, Katz's can't touch it. And again, it's the 6 inches thick part that really, you know, does it.
Well, if I ever make it back to D.C., I hope Terlitzky's is still there. And another place I want to go to, and I think it's the last one in the D.C. area, is Ollie's Trolley. You never...
Yeah, you bet. Next time, I'm going to.
Yeah, if it's still there, you check out...
And apparently it is. Well, I don't know what the pandemic did to them, but...
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of that going around. There's a lot of that. We have no way of telling even now of what the fallout from this thing is going to be. Because there's no end game in sight. I mean, they're talking about a vaccine maybe by the first quarter of next year, and they're talking about it being 65 to 75% effective. And then you've got the bozos who, and I don't mean to insult clowns, in general, having been a former clown. But you've got the bozos who, even if it was 100% effective, they don't want that vaccine bomb because it's got a microchip in it. And they can follow us wherever we go.
Yeah, that's Steve Gates' ARFID chip. And he's going to chip us all, and then he'll know when to give us a vaccine for us to not get sick or something, because freedom.
It is a new world order, Bob. They've been planning this since George H.W. Bush.
Million points of light. It was a million little RFID chips. That's what it was.
That's right. That's right. Running around in your blood system. If you're quiet, you
well, this evening
them.
You're going to learn more about GOAT than you ever wanted to know.
Okay, well, what was
Billable Rick says, stop telling us what meat to eat. Bob, stop telling us what meat to eat. Flavio said, I adore lamb and goat. I have it whenever I'm over at my Bangladeshi doctor friend. He'll get it from the Amish around here. Well, now.
I hadn't thought of the Amish.
Well, that's why things happen. Zebediah on a Mission Impossible, Zebediah and Lemuel refuse to answer the demon telephone and miss out on another adventure.
I so rarely
Dan points out goat is the most widely consumed meat in the world. It can be supported on marginal land that won't support beef or lamb. And it's tender and tasty.
Yeah. Jesus probably ate goat.
I'm sure he did. Fucking hillbilly elitist, says Steve in New York. Lee in New York says, do we have to fight? I want us to stay on the same side. Best deli. Signs Lee in New York City. I get it. I mean, like I said, been to Katz's. Love Katz's. You order the matzo ball soup at Katz's, and you get one matzo ball, but it's the size of a softball.
Yeah, yeah, that's how it is at Terlitzky's.
And the garlic sausage, God, that garlic sausage is so good.
Two people have to bring it to the table. Well, maybe I'm exaggerating. A hefty weight person.
And that bizarrely named beverage called an egg cream. I love those. There's no egg in them. There's no egg in them.
And Dr. Brown's Celray soda pop?
Cream soda.
That's living large, baby.
Yep. Yeah, I'd love to eat.
I have got to get up to the deli out here because it's been over 2 years since I've been there.
We are being informed of great play. Dan says Schwartz's in Montreal is amazing for their pastrami. I'll have to remember that if I ever get to Montreal. I got a link from Ron and Raleigh. I'll forward it along to you. Fresh goat meat in San Diego, California. Iowa Meat Farms, University Halal Market, Mideast Market. It's off just to the east of the 805, and northeast of Balboa Park.
Okay, yeah, I know right where that is. I wonder what would you serve with it? Probably rice pilaf, something like that.
Sure, that or in stews, it's fantastic. I remember being in the Caribbean during the Libboat cruise and having a West Indian curry goat stew.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it was heavenly.
Wow. See, that's another thing I don't have nearly often enough is a curry dish. I had some of the best curry years ago in the early 80s, early 85, I guess it was. But you'll never guess where it was, where I had this. It was just over the English border in Scotland. It was in near or in a town called Cannonby, which was not far from Lockerbie, which was where that plane came down that time, a few years later. I was in England for 2 weeks, and then I went to visit a pen pal up in Scotland for my final week. And she picked me up at the train station, and it was late. And she said, do you want to go to this place and have a bite to eat? And I don't know whether, you know, what it was with my thinking, but it just never occurred to me that you could get ethnic food in Scotland. I guess I was in a haggis mindset or something, scones or whatever.
Well, it's like the Germans. I remember going over there and wanting to eat, you know, some rouladen and sauerbraten and, you know, yummy stuff like that. And one of my hosts said, Germans hate German food. We want to eat everything else. And so, yeah. You know, Thai, of course, the because of the longstanding relationship between Turkey and Germany, there's all kinds of Turkish places, and it's all delicious. But we think about places from probably our colonialist bias. You know, I think of, but of course, England went wild over curry. And curry is as anybody can tell you, that's got a real working familiarity with it, curry is a catch-all term. It's not one thing. I mean, my God, in Southeast Asia alone, there are several different, and I love Thai curry. We've got a friend here who runs a little Thai restaurant just scant miles from me. And in fact, yesterday, she was cooking. She hasn't been doing a lot lately, but she was cooking yesterday, and we had chicken Penang curry. It was fantastic.
Well, they have, at the grocery stores in England and Scotland, curry flavored potato chips.
Although I'd buy them.
They don't call
crisps.
Them potato chips.
Crisps.
Yeah. Walkers, I think, is the name of the company.
No, it's kind of like over here when you get a little further east. You probably had them growing up in the D.C. area. You remember the Maryland crab boil flavored potato chips?
Oh yes, yeah, I
love those.
Utz has those. You can still buy them by mail.
Yeah.
Every now and again, I will see. You can't get Utz like west of. They may have Utz in the stores there where you live, but I have to every 3 or 4 months I'll have a hankering for Utz, and I'll get on the online and order me up a big box of them. You know, a bulk pack of Utz potato chips. Jesus.
God, do you get the crab boil
so
ones?
I'm so hungry. No, I'm usually a purist about it. I just get the standard original Utz chips. And then it satisfies my yen, if as you were, as it is. As what am I trying to say, Bob? It's not that hot. I'm just my words. See, I'm salivating too much. I'm too goddamn hungry, and I started it.
Your fault.
I have no one to blame but me. But I was trying to get a piece of gum to go with my last cup of the old coffee of the day, piece of Nicorette. You know, I quit smoking cigarettes 21 years ago this week.
Wow.
Put them puppies down and used the Nicorette to do it. And then even got off the Nicorette. And then about 10 years ago, I was going through a rather stressful time. So rather than start smoking again, I went out and bought a box of Nicorette. Now I'm hooked. Hooked on the fucking gum, Bob.
You gotta.
But I don't have.
You don't have a monkey on your back. License. You got a monkey in your mouth.
Well, that's one way of saying it. Yeah, I guess.
In a rather disgusting way, yes.
Tastes like chicken, Bob. What the hell? What did the first person who said thus and so taste like chicken? What when they ate chicken, what did they say it tasted like?
Right, that was my question. What did they think chicken tasted like? Hey, tastes like Komodo dragon.
Yeah, but did you ever try to clean one?
Ew.
That's why they don't have network vice presidents at the cannibal restaurant. They're not on the menu, Bob. You can't special order them because cleaning them is just a task that nobody wants to do.
Let's see. Don in West Tennessee says, ask Scott about Mario's Pizza in Arlington.
Oh, Mario's.
No goat meat, but a great ham steak and cheese club. The pizza slices used to be 25 cents a slice. They're still in business since the 1960s.
Who is that asking about that?
That's Don in West Tennessee.
Well, ask Don, or if Don can hear me, is he old enough to remember Topps, T-O-P-P-S, Topps Drive-In? And write to Bob and let me know.
It's the Northern Virginia Nostalgia Hour with Bob and Scott and Don, yes.
Topps was one of these places. They had about half a dozen locations all over the D.C. area. And it was an old-fashioned drive-up where you would drive and you would see the menu next to the place where you parked the car, and you would place your order on a little intercom sort of thing. And then a little bit later, the woman would come out. I don't think they were on roller skates, but they would come out and hang a tray off of the driver's side door window of your car, and all your food would be there, and they would, mom or dad, whoever was driving, would grab each item and pass them out. Great onion rings. And they were the D.C. area's first outlet for Kentucky Fried Chicken, back when the colonel was still in charge of KFC, back when it was where the potatoes were actually decent, the mashed potatoes, and the chicken was, I think the chicken was better.
Yeah, it was after he sold out that Harlan Sanders got himself in hot water by declaring that the mashed potatoes were wallpaper paste.
Yeah.
And that extra crispy was a goddamn fried dough ball on a stick.
Have you ever heard that blooper tape of Colonel Sanders? And he was quite elderly by that time, trying to cut a radio commercial.
Oh, no.
Take after take after take. I'll see if I can find the outtakes. Yeah, he was not having a good day in the recording studio. And we've all been down that road, you know?
Oh, my favorite is Orson Welles.
Oh, yeah, the
Fenders
peas.
And, the peas. And
oh, he reams the director or whoever is in the booth, just a new one, two new ones. Because you do not coach Orson Welles on delivery of anything.
No.
Whether it's a commercial.
But the funniest thing is that was later animated by the Warner Brothers team behind Animaniacs. Because
yeah, I think I've
Pinky,
seen that.
Pinky and the Brain. The Brain was the Orson Welles voice. And there's actually a Pinky and the Brain episode of the Brain doing those voiceovers.
Oh, wow.
It just so happens I've got Colonel Sanders here ready for us.
Oh, all right.
Quiet please.
Recording.
Go again.
I found a way to cook.
Take two.
I found a way to cook extra. Come on over and try my crispy. It's entirely different, and yet it's just as tender and tasty.
No,
and it's just as finger-licking good. You see, I found a way to cook chicken deep down and get that real crispy crust that some folks like. And it's just as tender and juicy, and I'll get it now. I found a way to cook chicken deep down and get that crispy, real crispy chick crust. Yet it's entirely different.
Crispy.
Crispy, yeah.
Now let's do a side-by-side comparison. There we go. Yep, frozen peas.
Do you want to go through everything and then come back?
No, tell me. I usually prefer to, but tell me what's wrong.
All right, I just think the very opening could be a little...
Yes. Nothing is more important than the simple act of people getting together.
Good. Could I have one more go, Lawson, please? Sorry.
What?
Could I have just one more take of that?
Why? I just did it right.
Yeah.
I'm not used to having more than one person in there. One more word out of you and you go. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
I take directions from one person under protest. But from two, I don't sit still. But who the hell are you, anyway? Why the hell are you asking me for another one?
Well, I thought there was a slight bonk, and I would like, just like to be saved.
Jesus.
What is an artist.
Do you mind telling me what that is?
A bang from outside.
A bang from outside.
Glass of water.
Could I see Mrs. Rogers for a minute, please?
Yes, certainly.
That was the bang outside, Mrs. Rogers shooting herself.
How you can say in July, and I'll go down on you. We were onto a can of peas, a big dish of peas, when I said in July.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, always. I'm always past that.
You are?
Yes. Well, that's about where I say in July.
You emphasize a bit in July.
Why? That doesn't make any sense. Sorry. There's no known way of saying an English sentence in which you begin a sentence with in and emphasize it. Get me a jury and show me how you can say in July. I'll go down on you. It's just idiotic, if you'll forgive me by saying so. That's just stupid. In July. I'd love to know how you emphasize in and in July. Impossible. Meaningless.
I think all they were thinking about was that they didn't want to...
He isn't thinking.
Wilson, can we just do one last...
Yeah?
And it was my fault. I said in July. If you can leave every July...
You didn't say it. He said it. You're a friend.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You're a friend.
Who the hell are you? And Don says, yes, of course I remember Topps Drive-In.
Great. Great God. I can hear I grew up in the 60s listening to two radio stations mostly, WPGC, which was over in Prince George's County, Top 40, but the other one was in Arlington, Weem, WEAM, home of the Weem Redcoats, the Weem team. And God damn, every night you would hear commercials from Mario's Pizza House.
They'll Weem you a new one.
And they say that the guy that ran the place, the general manager, was not very pleasant to work for. They had a great deal of turnover.
Just not a lot of great GMs out there.
No. You know who used to work at Weem? Charles Osgood, back when he was like in his 20s or something. And I forget the name that he... Oh, because Weem would... You would have a string of different DJs over the months who would come in, but they were obviously different people, but they would use the same air name because the station had the jingles, and they were too cheap to cut new
Ron
jingles.
Scott.
Yeah, there was a guy named Russ Wheeler. There were at least three Russ Wheelers that I recall. God, that's taking me back too far. I may swallow my spoon.
The old time radio hour. Oh, but Steve in New York says the best potato chips I've ever had are called Mike Sells in Ohio. They cook them in peanut oil. I've had those on occasion when I've crossed over the Ohio River.
Never had them, but I've heard of them.
And of course, growing up down south, Golden Flake.
Well, every region has its own local potato chip.
Oh, I know. West Virginia does, too, and I'll get hate mail for this. I cannot abide Mr. B's. Jesus, they are the vilest, greasiest, nastiest. Just it's like putting a piece of flash fried lard in your mouth.
There are a couple of potato chips that are regional out here. One, and they may not even be in business anymore. And if they are, I apologize for being misinformed. Laura Scudder potato chips, and I think there's a brand called Granny Goose potato chips. I want to hear the ads for those. You know, hello, this is Granny Goose. I don't know. Ask for him by name. How did I?
Jeremy in Vermont reminds us of, and I've played it on this program. The semi-famous clip of long-dead Casey Kasem losing it while recording his countdown show classic. That's still the dead dog. Yeah,
that never fails to
make me laugh. I just don't know why you people. I don't know how we come out of an up-tempo number into a story about a dead fucking dog. And I just wonder if I just wonder if Mr. Wiggles is a human. Ever heard that outtake?
Maybe. The dog's name, this is how much I know. The dog's name was Cuddles or Snuggles.
Yeah, Cuddle. I thought it was Mr. something.
Yeah. Now, long distance.
Oh, Jesus. Now we got to do that, don't we?
you better. I have a blooper trifecta, Bob. Come on. It's Monday. Let's do it.
And there it is, Casey Kasem, dead dog. Yeah. Make sure there's no
long-distance dedication. And this one is about kids and pets and a situation that we can all understand, whether we have kids or pets or neither. It's from a man in...
Which makes no sense at all, whether we have kids or pets or neither.
Cincinnati, Ohio. And here's what he writes. Dear Casey, this may seem to be a strange dedication request, but I'm quite sincere, and it'll mean a lot if you play it. Recently, there was a death in our family. He was a little dog named Snuggles.
Snuggles.
But he was most certainly a part of... Let's come start again. From coming out of the record. Play the record, okay?
Everybody's working for the weekend. Everybody wants a new romance.
When you come out of those up-tempo goddamn numbers, man, it's impossible to make those transitions. And then you got to go into somebody dying. You know, they do this to me all the time. I don't know what the hell they do it for, but goddamn it, if we can't come out of a slow record, I don't understand it. Is Don on the phone? Okay, I want a goddamn concerted effort to come out of a record that isn't a fucking up-tempo record every time I do a goddamn death dedication. Now, make it, and I also want to know what happened to the pictures I was supposed to see this week. It's the last goddamn time I want somebody to use his fucking brain to not come out of a goddamn record that is, that's up-tempo, and I got to talk about a fucking dog dying.
Casey's coast to coast.
I'm sorry, that just always does.
Oh, God.
That just always does me good.
Yeah, actually, all three of those, Orson Welles especially, can you imagine having the temerity to try to direct the director of Citizen fucking Kane?
Yeah, I know.
Who the fuck do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Jesus, I mean...
Yeah. No, Mr. Welles, it's WNBC.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, that's another great moment. In broadcast, WNBC.
Jesus.
And what's his, the actor, Paul Giamatti. Is that his name? As Kenny, the program director.
Pig Vomit.
Pig Vomit, yeah. He should have won a fucking Oscar for that role.
He really should have. Yeah, he was fantastic. We've got a further goat sighting update. Glenn in San Diego says, Scott, you can find your goat in City Heights, practically a stone's throw up the street from you at the Mideast Market on El Cajon Boulevard.
Right where that is.
City Heights is an ethnically diverse community where more languages and dialects are spoken than any community in the country. You'll find markets and eateries representing every region of Asia, Africa, the Middle East, Latin America, and Eastern Europe. It's a great neighborhood to explore for any epicurious adventurer.
Just down the street from me going the other way, and I've passed it on the bus 1,000 times, it's an Ethiopian restaurant that I've thought every time I pass it, I think you've got to go in there. You've got to go in there, and I never do. Maybe this is what I'll do once things get back to relatively normal and you can sit down and dine with silverware like a human being, you know? Instead of, you know, putting a feed bag on your goddamn face, eating White Castles. We don't have White Castles. What am I saying? We ought to have them, but we don't. But, yeah, check out some of those restaurants in City Heights and then go down to the Ethiopian restaurant and buy me some Alka-Seltzers at CVS because I'm sure I'll need them after that. Because that's adventurous food. That's not for the timid.
Oh, I'll try anything just about.
See, and this is what gets me about you, Bob. You will eat, and I've never eaten with you, obviously, never dined with you, because we've never crossed paths in 3D. But my sense of you is that the spicier it is, the better. And your level of tolerance for the fucking peppers and different things, it would kill 10 other mortal men, you know?
Well, I was mentioning our dear Thai friend who runs the little restaurant not far from here. Every time I get to feeling under the weather, I reach out to her and I say, I need a quart of your Tom Yum, not feeling real good. And she'll write back and say, I'll make it for you Thai hot. And I respond, yes. And yeah. If I'm running any kind of a fever or whatever, that stuff always breaks the fever because it's hotter than the fever is.
Well, there's a combination
of the chilies and the lemongrass and the galangal and
these are therapeutic old school remedies. When you get into certain herbs and spices and different things.
Well, isn't I had a note a little bit ago from our buddy Suman out in Arizona. Curry was invented by the British when they wanted to transport Indian workers all over the world back in 1800 to 1900. There are 13,000 officially recognized languages in India. Not a single one of them has the word curry in it. And by the way, Scott can find some fantastic goat curry in any Indian restaurant. And if I recall correctly, one of the translations of one of the spice blends called garam masala was developed as a function of Ayurvedic medicine, and so it's supposed to have curative properties.
And yeah, well, that's what I was getting at. It's
yeah, I was fleshing out what you were saying. In fact, I was in Beckley over the weekend. Had to go and check the mail. And big thanks for some jams and jellies to our buddy Larry in Liberalville. Damn, those are good. Home canned, homemade, yummy. So there's a little international market there, and I wandered in, and I love the Indian breads, and there's one that you do in an iron skillet or on a griddle like I got, called paratha, and it's frozen, and you fix it on a flat hot surface from frozen, and it puffs up just beautifully.
Oh wow!
And I got some of that, and I got some frozen garlic naan, which I can just eat forever.
It's naan.
N-A-A-N. Naan. It's a type of bread.
Oh.
It's a flatbread.
Okay. All right.
And I absolutely love it.
Well, sign up that flatbread to the Mark Eden bus developer. Those ads that you see in the back of Photoplay 100 years ago. Never mind. Go ahead.
Oh, and by the way, Herman says... Dear Bob and Scott, Ollie's Trolley does still exist. Only one location, 425 12th Street Northwest in D.C., a few blocks away from Ford's Theater. Just thought you'd like to know.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Sincerely.
I wonder if the waffle shop is still around.
Now you're just gratuitously playing with the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. That's all you're doing.
No, I'm really not, Bob, because these are the memories of my younger life. You know, the Epicurean, you know, the taste, they say that hearing and the sense of smell are the big senses. But I have always, there are tastes that are, I don't know what region of the brain those memories are stored. They're indelible. I mean, I think back to Thursdays at my grade school in the 60s in Alexandria, Virginia. On the menu Thursdays was Hungarian goulash, or what they said was Hungarian goulash. And there was a taste associated with that meal that was unlike any other taste, you know. And all these years later, if I taste anything that's even remotely like it, it triggers those neurons or whatever in that region of the brain.
Well, that's sense memory related to food.
Yeah. And I'm glad that Ollie's Trolley is still there. Their French fries and their cheeseburgers, I love them. Now, maybe my taste buds are different than other people's taste buds, but I figure they wouldn't not be around if somebody wasn't buying them and eating them and coming back. You know.
And Ron and Raleigh reminisces over Burger Chef drive-ins in Alexandria and Rich's.
Yeah.
The Burger Chef was superior to McDonald's. We even had those down south.
They had pretty good fries, too, as I recall.
And Ron adds, there's a line in an old spoken word song that goes, he'll eat anything that don't move too fast or crawl off the plate. And Ron says, I say if you don't sweat, you ain't it.
Yeah.
That's about my speed.
Jeez.
And what I was saying is in this little international market in Beckley, there was an entire cardboard box of those skinny little red, and some of them turn it green, and some of them turning to red chilies. And I knew I was going to be running around for a while, so I couldn't keep them cool or anything, so I didn't get them.
Yeah.
But God, I wanted them.
Did you climb into the box and like
no, I didn't. I didn't even touch them. I didn't even touch them. Because I knew that I would eventually screw up and go to the men's room somewhere and spend the rest of the afternoon in terrible pain.
Say no more. I know. But see, that's how you are about your spicy things. You're like a kid frolicking in the rainbow colored ball bin at Chuck E. Cheese. You see the box of those things and I can imagine you diving right in. Naked.
No, not naked. No. Maybe with a hazmat suit. And a complete respirator, sure.
Jeez.
But it's not just heat. Heat is gratuitous. It's the flavor that comes with it. And then the heat gets on those little endorphin receptors and you get this endorphin flood and you just feel good.
Yeah, you get that sweat, and yeah, well, that's the therapeutic nature of things. That's the chemistry of the mind and the body, and all of it just interacts in some wondrous way. And God, I could go for a sirloiner from Topps Drive-In right about now. I remember going to summer school one year, and that year summer school was at my old alma mater. I was still in late grade school, junior high at the time, so I wasn't yet a student at T.C. Williams. That didn't happen until a couple of years later, but I had to go to summer school for math at T.C., and went to lunch at Tops, which was like a block and a half from where T.C. Williams, the old T.C. Williams, was. For anybody who doesn't know T.C. Williams, go on to Netflix or Amazon and get the movie Remember the Titans. I think I told you about, I was telling a friend about that. I actually, after I moved here, I went to a lot of movies my first year here in San Diego, and before the movies are the coming attractions, and they showed a coming attraction for Remember the Titans, and for some reason I didn't make the connection that was about the true story of my senior year at T.C. Williams, when they combined the schools to get a better racial balance, and it resulted in a great football team that won big in the state or the Commonwealth that year. Ah, man, I'm all over the place today, Bob, and I'm sorry for doing this, but I just do it, and you bring it out in me.
That's okay. You. That's it's supposed to be like that sometimes.
And then the Horn family jumps in. Let me tell you about the book that I ordered, that I need to finish the book I'm now reading before I can launch into this one. And I thought of you as soon as I heard about this book because of your connection with CNN. It's a new book by a lady named, well, let me turn it around so I can read it. What is her name? It just shows her last name. Well, her last name, I think it's Lisa. And her last name is Napoli, Napoli, and it's called Up All Night, Ted Turner, CNN, and the Birth of 24-Hour News. Lisa Napoli.
Napoli.
Or yeah. Napoli.
Napoli.
And I haven't even opened it. It arrived last week, and I haven't even looked at it because I try to be disciplined and finish the book that I'm currently reading, which I'm only about 100 pages into, and it's a big-ass book about Howard K. Smith that he wrote, another one of the people that I like from days gone by. But when I saw this book on C-SPAN, on Book TV, I said, God, we got to get a copy of this to Bob. And I can't vouch for it because I haven't read it, but the interview was good. So.
Oh, let me know, because it sounds like something I could definitely get into. Don says, I'm a few years older than Scott, but we used to kick their asses.
TC, well, yeah, they weren't all that great. And I went to three high schools during my four-year high school career. I went to Bishop Ireton, an all-boys Catholic school back then, and I had no business going to Bishop Ireton because, first of all, I was beginning to be a lapsed Catholic even then, okay? But I only went there 9th and 10th grade. But I was not what you would call a disciplined student. I did not apply myself in ways that the school was known for. Therefore, I flunked out after 2 years. Duh. So then my junior year, I went to George Washington High School, which years gone by was attended by Jim Morrison for a time, Cass Elliott of Mamas and Papas for a time, and years ago, Willard Scott for 4 years, okay? And it was within walking distance. So that was my junior. But then my senior year, they decided to make the East and West End schools, 9th and 10th grade, and make T.C. Williams, which was in the middle of town, 11th and 12th grade. And people raised hell about it. And, you know, I told you the story about the Nazis who were against that idea.
Right, yes.
But my 12th grade, my final year in high school, was probably the best of all because we were all in it together, you know. We were all in it together. I wish we could recapture some of that all in it together mindset. You know, wouldn't that kind of be?
I don't know if we ever can. I read a commentary piece earlier today that was rather a grim and shocking, but not surprising, analysis of, you know, where we are.
Yeah.
And the title of it, and it came from the editorial board. At I think history.com. No, it didn't. But anyway, John Storr writes, prepare for a permanent pandemic. Things are never going back to normal. And it's a grim assessment, Scott. But I think it's a convincing piece. He writes, there was a brief period when this country could have done something about the novel coronavirus now crawling over every nook and cranny of our individual lives and society. There was a time when it could have been minimized, even stopped, while we recovered from damage already done. That moment has passed. The pandemic is here to stay. Its individual and social impact is permanent. At first we talked about a lost month, then about a lost summer, soon a lost year, lost decade, until finally, if we're lucky and if we're wise, we realize what we're talking about is a lost generation.
Jesus.
It's accompanied by some, he includes some horrifying statistics. One that I saw over the last few days. Nearly 100,000 children. Remember how Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist with that thing on his head? Remember how he said that children aren't affected by it? That they don't get it very easily? And it doesn't make them very sick? And we ran the numbers, and even using his numbers, it means over the course of, you know, reopening a bunch of schools, we're talking about a million or nearly a million dead children using his mortality numbers.
Yeah.
Well, at North Paulding High School, the young woman who posted the photograph of the hallway with the kids all LARPing and smollicking and lollygagging and wallering all over and grabulating and spewing and spraying and singing and carrying on and hollering, hey, buddy! Well, six kids and three staff members have now tested positive for the Rona.
Yeah.
They were 3 days into their reopening of the schools, and they have shut down. They're shut down today and tomorrow. But I guess they're going to try to go back again Wednesday, because Brian Kemp either can't or won't learn, and those maggots in charge of those school systems can't or won't learn. And so if you take those kids, they got sent home, six kids got sent home positive for the Rona, and they got sent home where they're going to give it to Mama and Daddy or Meemaw and Papaw.
Yeah.
And there's nothing, almost nothing that can be done.
And that's just one school. That's just one place.
Yeah.
One.
An entire second grade class got shut down after 1 day of open school. Also in Cherokee County, Georgia. This opinion piece, the writer states, do not believe Joe Biden's victory, should that happen, will mean going back to sane public health policy. These states decided to endanger the well-being of their own children to score political points. Moreover, 11% of the country won't wear a mask no matter what, according to a recent Wall Street Journal survey. That percentage will triple, even quintuple, under a Democratic president. They will rally in numbers high enough for viral spread under flags declaring, "Don't tread on me." Many will refuse to get vaccinated whenever a vaccine is viable, which might take years, because they already believe vaccines generally are secret plots to harm them. Resistance to masks and vaccines will have the backing of the Republican Party and its billionaire donors. You thought the coronavirus was going to go away someday. Think again.
Well, just as you were reading that, I freeze-framed here on CNN, which I've gone on, but I'm not listening, as I speak with you and the Horn family. Banner headline across the bottom third of the screen, breaking news, report, colon, number of... Now, here's your grim statistic of the day, boys and girls. Report. Number of U.S. child COVID cases up 90% last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We're screwed, Bob. We're beyond screwed. I'm going to have to cut, when we ever get around to cutting my little drop-in, we're going to have to do two versions. We're going to have to do the usual, we're all screwed, Bob. And then me screaming at the top of my lungs in a falsetto voice, we're beyond screwed, you know?
We're so far past screwed, the light from screwed won't reach us for a million years.
Bingo. Bingo. Exactamundo.
And he points out, the U.S. is a patchwork. 13,500 school districts with 13,500 ways of going back to school amid a pandemic. The only safe way, however, is with a national response. We need not only adaptive safety practices at the schools, but also lower amounts of virus in each community. Tom Bossert, a former White House Homeland Security Advisor under Trump, told the Washington Post, a suppression-level effort to shrink and not just mitigate the spread of COVID requires a national strategy. But what he points out is their national strategy is precisely what the president does not want. For one thing, this is probably the most evil and infuriating part of all of this.
All right.
For one thing, he thought blue state people were the only ones getting sick.
Yeah.
For another, leading a national response would put him at the risk of being wrong. And Donald Trump is never wrong. And so you take that and you add to it a story that David in South Carolina, Stan said along just a little bit ago, of Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, gave an interview. And remember, Ron Johnson's the one that got his ass handed to him by Hillary Clinton because he's a dim bulb. He has declared, according to an article in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Johnson said in a Friday interview with Breitbart News tonight that he hopes negotiations stay broken down between the Trump administration and House Democratic leaders on a new pandemic relief package, given the trillions Democratic leaders proposed in new spending. From my standpoint, the breakdowns in the talks is very good news. It's very good news for future generations. I hope the talks remain broken down. That evil piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm, you know, with each new day, whatever tiny glimmer of hope I might have held, you know, cupped in my hand to keep it from blowing out, the little ember, it dims with each new passing day. And earlier you were talking about the little motorcycle conclave up in Sturgis. Now, how many people were at that thing?
Oh, ultimately, there'll be 100,000 or more.
Okay, so all those people don't live in Sturgis or even in the outlying areas of Sturgis. They came in from somewhere, and after the big shindig is over, they're going back to wherever they came from. And if no more than a handful of them wore masks, packed in together, cheek by fucking jowl, you do the fucking math.
But hold the belly button. Yep.
I mean, how can anybody, even on powerful hallucinogenics, think that there's any good outcome to result from that? And from people like Senator Johnson of Wisconsin, okay?
He works in the lumber mill there.
That young student down in Georgia... didn't she get suspended or had the threat of suspension?
Yeah, she got suspended. Then they unsuspended her, said there would be no mark on her permanent record. And now her own classmates are posting statements saying they're going to beat the shit out of her if she shows her face in school again.
Well, there you go. That's the prevailing
and then
there,
and then there's mindset. And then there's little Marco Rubio.
Oh, God, here we go.
Who, if you open his Twitter account, says follower of Christ. You know what? I'm guessing his avatar, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate itinerant rabbi,
who wore a dress every day of his life. I'm guessing Yeshua would say, you know, bub, if you have to write it out, you're probably not doing it right.
Yeah.
You know, let your light so shine before others that they may yada, yada, yada. So he tweeted, because he felt like he needed to unburden himself of his feelings about schools reopening. He retweeted CNN with his own comment, the CNN photo of the crowded, LARPed-up, smollocked-up school hallway there in Paulding County, Georgia. And he said, any setting in which people interact will lead to infections. The good news is these infected students are at very low risk of complications. The key is lowering risk of student infections, more importantly, lowering risk of students infecting staff or high-risk family members. And once again, you know, it's one of those... It's one of those Professor Spicoli moments.
You dick!
Because he is.
Yeah.
And so what he's saying as a follower of Christ, he's completely okay with infecting students, when in fact, the numbers are rising on the negative consequences of those infections. And so... more kids are having more serious consequences. And so the key is lowering risk of student infections. Well, the only way to do that is not open schools. There's no way to there's no way to do it in any school as it has been in any designed physical structure school that we have in this country right now.
Right.
But, you know, down in Alabama, they're going back to the universities are opening back up. Fraternity Rush is on. They're getting ready for Sorority Rush. And you know, they're whistling past a graveyard pretending that it won't affect them.
Well, it goes back to that article or editorial. We are being encouraged. Some are being encouraged to behave as if everything is normal. We're under blue skies and everything is tickety-boo. Well, no, everything is not tickety-boo. Everything is not normal. We couldn't be less normal if we grew another head out of one of our butt cheeks. You know, that's how not normal things are. Yet, we have the tangerine-tinted, delusional, demented, inept fool in chief, just cheerleading for everything he's worth, which ain't much. It ain't billions and billions, I'm telling you. Okay? He's cheerleading for everything he's worth, which ain't much, that everything is just fine, fine, fine. Like the Alanis Morissette song, Hand in My Pocket. Smoking a cigarette and everything's hell in a taxi cab. Everything's fine. No, it's not fine. We will be fucking lucky if we get to within hailing distance of fine in the next 10 years.
The very idea that Marco Rubio would say that there's any good news. I mean, who wrote it? Did he write this by himself? Did he type this with his own little thumbs? The good news is these infected students that are at a very low risk of complications. That's like saying the good news... the good news out of Sandy Hook is that only 23 people died, or 27, whatever the final number was. I'm sorry, I don't recall it.
Yeah, I think
instead of three times that. The good news is there were only 20 plus dead children. It could have been 60. You know, what a malevolent, toxic monster.
I know. I mean, you know, you don't have to convince me. Anybody with a couple of viable brain cells to bang together should be able to see this. You know, but this is even beyond newspeak. In 1984 was a happy little bedtime tale. compared to the reality.
Right.
We're
and then there's the clip of the gym owner over on Fox and Fiends being interviewed by Brian Kilmeade. And this happens. Hockey puck optional.
They're dying. These gym owners are dying. They have small margins anyway, and they can't do anything because these politicians won't let them. What's your message?
Well, listen, my message is this. Don't quit. Keep up the fight, right? Keep the places clean, and it's a matter of people coming in. And I know the percentages are very low when people are in those fitness centers. They're very low. So just be smart, and people are being smart. And the bottom line is, like, we have to be diligent. And when you're diligent, great things happen. Same thing with exercise, same thing with nutrition, because that's that downward spiral. We talk about the upward spiral. You want to make sure people are exercising, and we've always said, right, at Official Body by Jake, we always talk about the broomstick, towel, and chairs, exercises you can do in your home, in a park, anywhere, as long as you're keeping your body moving, and nutrition. So important, Bri, you know that.
Yeah. So
what is that? What is that gym owner's name?
That's Jake Steinfeld of Body by Jake. I remember when he was on CNN.
I knew it. I knew the voice.
And so these gym owners are dying, he says, completely oblivious to the fact that we have crossed the 160,000 mark of people who aren't gym owners fucking dying.
Well, let's look at where his priorities are, Bob. He's perfectly okay to risk the lives, literally risk the lives of his employees and his customers. You know, because after all, even if they die, they're going to leave a buff corpse. Well, I don't care how well developed your biceps and triceps and your glutes are. When you're dead, you're fucking dead. And as the Bible says, the dead know nothing. And actually, more than a few living folks know nothing. They'd have to study all night to get a passing grade on nothing at this point. They know less than nothing. It just tries my atheist patience, Bob. I was going to say Christian patience, but I'm not a Christian. It tries my patience as an intelligent, reasonable human being, that the country is heavily populated with people who their heads are so far up Trump's ass and the Republicans' ass that there is no light. There is no light.
No, there's no just smiling faces when he yawns.
Yeah, and they don't by now they don't even notice the stink. Okay? God damn. Well, you've cheered me right up.
Well, that's my freaking job, Scott. I mean,
I know. I know.
You know that all of this. I mean,
I feel like Lloyd Bridges in Airplane.
I picked a wrong day to stop sniffing glue. Every morning is that.
I would like to think that there's a way out, but it's like it will involve. We have got to make the outcome of this election unmistakable. We've got at 7:30, they've got to be able to say, "Boy, the numbers are looking truly horrendous for Donald John Trump." You know. It's relatively simple. You'll get your ballot in the mail sometime in the next 60 days, depending on your state, 90 days. What is it now, August 10th? The ballots will go out in late September, I think, in some places. When you get your ballot, open it up, you know, think of it, you may already be a winner. That it's the winning entry for your publisher's clearinghouse. When you get your ballot, it's your winning entry to have a chance at getting your fucking country back. Rip that thing open, grab a black or blue ballpoint pen, and sit down and vote like you've got some fucking sense, and throw a couple of stamps, throw a half dozen stamps on that thing, even if it's postage paid, and hand deliver it anyway, even though you're not mailing it to your
local
registrar.
And you know what? I've got the perfect stamp for it too.
Oh, okay, the Bugs Bunny or
yes, I've got a full sheet of Bugs Bunny stamps.
There you go. There you go. I've got a Bugs Bunny watch I'm going to start wearing again once I find a place that I can get a battery for it.
What would be even better is if there... I need to check and see if there's one that has Yo Semite Sam in it.
Yo Semite.
Oh, and did you... I caught earlier today... One of my favorite right-wing morons is, without a doubt, Nimrata Haley, lately governor of South Carolina and U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Because I just can't. I always go back and I revisit the story of how she got suckered by the magnificent Moscow morning Zucker DJs into believing she was talking to President of Poland. And talked about the imaginary nation of Binomo. So she actually went on Twitter today, or in the last 24 hours or so, to whine about botched deliveries from popcorn.com.
What?
I wish I was kidding.
Tell me more.
I so sincerely am not.
Tell me more.
According to Nimrata Haley, she ordered let's see here. Just take me a second. Yeah, there it is. You there? Scott?
Yeah, oh, okay. I'm right here. I was just listening.
Oh, okay. Nimrata Haley said, okay at Popcorn Factory. Two messed up birthday orders missed delivery dates with no explanation. First time I gave you the benefit of the doubt. Second one tells me not to buy from you again. # disappointed nephew. Really? A botched delivery of popcorn ruined his day.
It got there late?
I don't know. But I just, I responded to her and said, are you sure you didn't order it from some Moscow DJs pretending to sell popcorn, you Titanic fool? imagine, you're Nikki Haley, you've got wealth, you've got power, and so you're going to use it to beat up on some poor soul sticking popcorns in tin cans. And by the way, they ship a lot with the U.S. Postal Service. And maybe the reason they didn't get there is because the guy she desperately wants to be vice president to has taken a fucking axe to the Postal Service out of mortal terror that people might use the mails to cast legitimate ballots to throw his sorry orange ass into the gutter.
You think?
Ah! God, these people.
Yeah, they're out there, Bob. They're out there. And that's one of the reasons that I and others like me tune in every day. And a good number could always be better, but a good number of us send a few bucks to support this work, this ministry, if I can even use that word. Because this is the ministry of truth and reality. You may go up and down the dial, up and down your cyberspace dial, and not hear anything quite like this. Because if you're not hearing it anywhere else, you're definitely going to hear it here. And that's worth $5 a month or $10 a month. But, you know, and don't hurt, like Bob says, don't hurt yourself. Do what you can. Because if we can keep this outpost of reality going, we're all going to be better off. I can't tell you. I don't know even how long I've been listening and participating in this program. I don't know what I did or how I, you know, made it from day to day. before I landed on this in this oasis of reality. And sometimes the reality is just enough to make you cry, but yet you know you're not being lied to when you tune in here 5 days a week. You know that you're getting an ongoing conversation about where we are. It's like the magic you are here sign at the mall, you know? It's a resource that we cannot be without.
Well, I appreciate you saying that so far.
Even a couple of years ago, it was the resource that we could not be without. But in today's world, are you kidding me? Can you imagine people in the Horn family and the congregation? Can you imagine how bleak and dark and void of anything worthwhile life would be without this fucking program?
I know. I don't
want to think about it.
Well, the community I learned a new word this evening. Right?
Goat? No,
it wasn't goat. No, it wasn't goat. I learned it, and now I've forgotten it. David in South Carolina, Stan, I think, sent it along.
Oh, the new term, the...
Sadopopulism.
Yes. Sadopopulism, yeah, that's an apt way to put it.
That's a keeper.
Yeah. Yeah. Put that in heavy rotation, as we used to say in radio, Bob. Make that an A record.
Yeah, and it's like something that our pal, Sister Carol Baker, responding to Nimrata Haley, said, 165,971 dead from COVID. 5,234,432 infected Americans. Gross domestic product contracting by a third. People starving and being evicted. But your focus is to take one struggling business and drag them on Twitter. Nimrata, delete your Twitter account. Your priorities are so screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. The woman's got popcorn on her mind.
And the funny thing is, like so many people, she just puts the tweet out there and then walks away from it. Yeah. And everybody responds to it. She never says anything more.
How far has this country fallen, Bob, when the hardworking men and women of the U.S. Postal Service, and it's a fucking service, people, they have become an object of ridicule and scorn and politicized. These fuckers break their back 5 days a week, 6 days a week, actually, although you wouldn't know it necessarily, the way they're deliberately slowing down the fucking mail.
Christ, and I mean, I can't get over that. That is an act of treason.
Yeah. I don't know where his final resting place is, but somewhere Benjamin Franklin's corpse, that whirring noise you hear is the sound of him spinning at 8 million RPM in his grave. And God help us, if he was buried on a hill, you better go down to the bottom of the hill.
Well, it just so happens that last summer I visited his grave.
Right.
It was literally around the corner from the hotel I was staying in.
Yeah.
And in a church graveyard there. I did what everybody else does. You know, he's the one who said a penny saved is a penny earned. Well, what you do is you go and you put a penny on his grave.
Oh.
And it's all bricked over to keep people from trying to dig him up. Because, you know, we're just that fucked up in this country.
Yes, we sure are.
But you're absolutely right. A working postal system is a sine qua non to any state that wants to consider itself successful.
Well, that's the baseline.
It is the most basic element of communication.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a country that invented the Pony Express just to get the mails through from the east side of the continent to the west. My mother was a postal worker, and she had not just respect but reverence for it. And this DeJoy creep, who owns a shit ton, millions of dollars worth of stock in other shipping, private shipping companies,
yeah,
has taken a meat axe to it. And again, that goes back to that editorial that said everything's not going to just miraculously come back to normal if we can elect Joe Biden. That's a big if. It is the work of generations. You know, it's like something John and PA wrote to me a little bit ago. I saw over the weekend members of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade praising Trump for his executive orders, which actually do next to nothing meaningful for anyone. They're saying he's outlefting the Democrats. Jesus, John says, why do these people run out to praise this fucker before checking to see if what he does actually yields any positive results? And that's so true, because they've got as bad a case of own the libs as the maggots do.
Yeah.
And in fact, there was a list that's been bruited about lately. Some right-winger allegedly compiled a list of dangerous lefties and then deleted it, but it was miraculously screen-caught. Ah. Well, a lot of the people on it are members of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade, which tells me that if the list is legit and was really put together by some maggot, that they're trying to propel the Purity Brigade, they're trying to promote the Purity Brigade as the legitimate voice of the so-called left in America. And, you know, for years I've said, ha! What left? Because in any other country, wanting people to be able to go to the doctor when they're fucking sick and not be financially ruined over it, and wanting every person in the country to be able to do that, that is centrism, pure and simple.
Yeah, well, decency is where it is. It's a thing where it's an offshoot of being in it together. It's a result of the prevalent mindset being,
we have not known that feeling since VJ Day in 1945.
I don't know, Bob. I remember growing up in the 60s, and maybe I was in a place where the madness wasn't running rampant. But I remember a time when you'd... Your postal carrier was along the lines of anybody in uniform, whether it was
I get that part. I'm talking about just in general principles of national unity.
I mean, that's where I was going. There was a certain pride in a lot of people's heart, maybe not everybody, because there's always going to be people who are not happy with it, and some of them rightfully so. But on most of our days, they were good days for a large number of people. But it wasn't just that. You didn't just sit down on your laurels or Hardee's and revel in how good it was for you.
Or out west, Carl's Jr.
Right. And you would think in terms of, well, everybody should have it as good as I've got it, and that was the prevalent mindset.
And that was also an era of massive unionization.
Well, there you go.
Where principles like a harm to one is a harm to all really took root.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've lost that. This is the thing that we may never recapture, but we've got to get some semblance of sanity and decency back into our populace, if not our system. Otherwise, Bob, we are literally all screwed. Because if it gets
Lee in New York says, can we also include July 20th, 1969? And I know exactly of which Lee speaks.
Yeah, well, I remember that day or night.
But it was fleeting. And Nixon became bored with it in a couple of years. And Flavio, meanwhile, says, that popcorn delivery, what about people who depend on the U.S. Postal Service for their prescriptions? Fuck Nikki Haley. And again, I refer back to our dear friend, Sister Carol Baker. Her son has a medical condition that requires medication that has to be refrigerated point to point. And the last I checked in, they insist on shipping to her via UPS. And the last I saw on the story, she said she had told them, something along the lines of, I will shoot the next UPS person that shows up on my doorstep with a box of spoiled medicine.
Does the phrase time sensitive mean anything to you people?
Right. And we're not talking about it has to travel 1,000 miles. And they still manage to fuck it up. The United States Postal Service, just like Social Security, are efficiently run as compared to the massive for-profit enterprises like FedEx and UPS, DHL and the like.
Yeah.
Medicare is more efficiently run than any for-profit healthcare system in the country.
Yeah, and at a lower cost to boot.
And this is why they hate it.
I know. I just looked at the clock. I didn't mean to bogart the open phones portion of the show today, but you know how Bob and I get. One thing leads to another, and hopefully it's all good and makes sense and inspires people.
Look, it's like everybody. Again, the concept of conversation radio turns on the ability of people to converse.
Well, there's that, yes.
And not making people feel so pressured that they got to, you come on, I bring you on, and you, Megadiddos from Busted Knuckle, I love you, Rush. Well, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me. And then, and God knows, he's not the only one who does it, and it's not just on that side. But somebody gets to utter 15 words, and then the guy whose show it is monologues on that for the next 20 minutes.
Yeah, till the next commercial break for the thing that picks up the bowling ball or whatever. Yeah. And that's how lucky we are, people. Not lucky. We're fortunate. We're invested in this. I know that I can turn this show on for 3 hours a weekday and know I can literally bet my life on the fact that I'm not going to hear an ad for the vacuum cleaner that picks up a bowling ball or the space-age mattress that'll make my ass feel like I'm cushioned in the hand
what
of God.
You need, what you need, Scott, is Super Beats.
Super Beats. Jesus. I don't want to hear. I thought I'd heard the last of Super Beats. There used to be. You couldn't turn on CNN or MSNBC without every 12 minutes hearing a goddamn commercial for Super Beats. I don't like Beats as a general rule. I'm okay with Harvard Beats.
I saw one of the funniest images over the weekend. I had to show it to Agnes and Ferg, and they both giggled merrily. Okay. It was just a picture of broccoli. But the broccoli, you know how broccolis will have little offshoots?
Yeah.
There's the head of broccoli. Well, this one looked like the broccoli had an arm, and at the end of the arm was a little finger with a little middle finger pointing up.
Oh, man.
And it was a photograph. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a drawing. It was a photograph. But it was captioned, "When you hate broccoli, but the broccoli hates you worse."
Well, see, this is the state that we're in, Bob, when the fucking produce is flipping you off.
Oh, well, speaking of the state we're in, so today there's a derecho roaring across the United States.
Yeah.
I sincerely hope it doesn't hit here, because on our rickety, coal-fried, antiquated, held together with spit toilet paper and baling wire power grid, it gives me the horrors, because we could be out for days, out of power for days or weeks.
Yeah, you've been down that road
this ain't my first rodeo or my first derecho. So it's worrisome. Well, Saturday morning I wake up. I think it was Saturday morning. Maybe it was yesterday morning. Can't remember now. They all run together. And as Steve from Georgistan mentioned in the chat room, son of a gun, we'd had an earthquake.
Oh, yeah. I was wondering if you felt it up there.
I did not. I'm on the north side of the New River, and nothing ever comes here except derechos. So, you know, a 5.1 magnitude earthquake with a likelihood of aftershocks. It was near Sparta, North Carolina. It was deep in the ground on ancient, ancient fault lines. And then today, derecho, with the possibility of an inland tsunami on Lake Michigan. And every time you see one of these things, you go, "Oh fuck, 2020." And you never ask the question, "Okay, well, what's next?" Don't ever ask what's next of 2020.
No.
Murder hornets, hallucinogenic zombie cicadas, goddamn.
Hell, before it's over, Bob, there may be winged monkeys like in The Wizard of Oz. I'm telling you. Coming down and swooping up poor little Toto.
Yeah, jeez. And all type and all of them typing Hamlet.
Yeah. I love it when you speak so encouragingly of our future, Bob. It just warms the cockles of my heart.
Yeah, it just kind of makes you want to go and take in a, take in a Sean Foyt concert and have done.
Yeah, what is the correct spelling of that name? I tried to Google it.
F-E-U-C-H-T.
Well, I was way off. My God, have you ever had your Google say, huh?
Yeah, Kid Mark in the chat room reminded me of the proper pronunciation, Foyt.
Jesus. Well, Bob, it has been a multitude of pleasures.
I've had a blast
with you. I remember earlier I said I was going to stick my thumb somewhere on something that you were going to mention, and I can't remember. Well, I pulled my thumb out, and there was no plum.
Oh, Mark Levin.
Well, I wonder. Oh, Mark Levin, yes. I can't go another moment without it. Is it quick enough to where you can do it? Or?
Oh, yeah. This is just, you know, one of those moments.
He got the most irritating voice on earth, by the way.
Yes, he does. Long ago, you know, I used to joke that I've got a face made for radio. And then we realized that Mark Levin has a voice made for print.
He makes Alex Jones sound positively lyrical. That's how bad Mark Levin's speaking voice is.
Yes.
Or ranting voice. Jesus. Go ahead. I'm sorry. See, this is why nothing gets done. I interject too goddamn much. But go ahead.
Well, I'm looking for the story. There it is. Yep. So Mark Levin shows up on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And, of course, the topic is schools reopening. And Mark Levin declared, and no lightning bolt came down out of the sky, proving, of course, the absence of a real bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky. He said, Democrat governors have shut down this economy from sea to shining sea. And even me doing that voice isn't nearly as irritating as his actually is.
And they like it both ways, the Democrats. They want to lock everybody up like we're lamb in cages, and then they want to complain about the economic consequences. And then they say, this president, look what he's doing. Let me tell you, payback is a bitch. You remember Obama with his phone and his pen? Well, apparently he left his phone and his pen, and President Trump picked it up. And Nancy Pelosi, what was their priority? They want to destroy the electoral system. They want open borders for illegal aliens. They want benefits for illegal aliens. And they want all of America to bail out New York, New Jersey, Illinois, and California's pension systems.
And then he got around to teachers' unions. And compared teachers in American public schools to
George Wallace standing in the school doorways, not allowing our little kids to go to school because they won't follow the science.
Oh, God.
A segregationist, racist bastard who tried to block black children from getting a decent education after the Supreme Court ruled in Brown versus Board of Education. And this towering intellect of the right says that trying to keep kids from getting fucking sick is the same thing as George Wallace's segregation.
There you go.
They have to constantly one-up each other. They have to say something more outrageous, something more hateful, something more disgusting, or else they lose their relevance.
Well, I'm surprised they haven't made enemies of each other. And maybe they have, and I missed it. I'm not a big watcher of anything other than CNN or MSNBC. I don't look at Fox because I've read the book, The Loudest Voice in the Room. I know Roger Ailes' story, you know? Or as I call him, Jabba the Ailes, you know? Read that. If you've never read that book, that's an incredible story. The Loudest Voice in the Room, and I think there was a TV miniseries based on it. I think it's on Amazon. I haven't looked at it, but, I mean, that guy, and he wanted to set up something like Fox News all the way back during Nixon's first term. That's over 50 years ago, Bob. That's in 1969. 69 through 72 was Nixon's first term. And Roger Ailes, even back then, thought that there was a liberal slant to the mainstream media news, the network news, and he wanted to set up an alternative fucking network to supposedly give the straight dope on reality, according to Roger and his goons.
Well, I got one last one to close the program out with.
All right.
We gotta go. You're gonna love this. We gotta go to Greenville, right, South Carolina for this one, Scott.
The home of Oliver B. Green, radio evangelist. But go ahead.
That's two things. Oliver B. Green and sadopopulism. Tonight was a win. By the way, there'll be a Malloy's on his way in about 56 minutes and change. So stick around, headon.live for that at 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. It will be rollicking as ever. Greenville, South Carolina, where a woman gets pulled over for having her anti-vaxxer, anti-COVID-19 testing or screening or whatever sign blocking her rearview windshield. It was a perfectly legitimate stop for a violation of the traffic code. You cannot obscure your rear window, your rear view.
Yeah.
It's dangerous.
Doesn't matter what the sign says.
Right. This was not content-based. But she's got a homemade poster taped to her car's driver's side door that I can see. This is COVID-19. It's got a zero with a slash through it. COVID-19 screening, zero with a slash through it. COVID-19 testing, !! So he pulls her over And the fact the fact that she does not get tased, pepper sprayed, handcuffed, killed, tells you most of what you need to know about her. But it's one of those situations where you just have to hear it for yourself.
I want to see your badge. I don't care. I want to see it. You know your number. What's your number? Your number's not on your badge. I don't. Okay, you read it to me. I don't have my glasses on. 65. No, read me your badge number. Don't let you know I read your badge number. I'm getting my glasses. I have three Navy officer children, NSA submarine. I have three Navy kids. Oh, no reason to get upset because we're in communist Greenville, South Carolina.
Communist.
Oh, my God.
Communist Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, my God.
Somebody fire up the Internationale. But she wasn't done.
Did she tell the officer, hold on, I've got to get my glasses?
Yeah.
Did I hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. My dear.
I am not disorderly. I have freedom of speech. You're being disorderly. I'm getting my glasses so I can read your badge. I have any rights at all? You made me wait for half an hour. I'm going to get my glasses to read your badge number.
I should point out, because we give credit where credit is due, this Greenville, South Carolina police officer is wearing a mask. So good on him.
That's suspect behavior, Bob.
And she's also flying a American flag, this woman is, on the driver's side of her car out the rear window. And on the passenger side, she's flying, of course, a urine-colored snake flag.
Well, of course.
And her car's just got posters taped all over it.
You know, Bob, something about me hopes that his badge number is like Sergeant Joe Friday's
714. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever wonder if the people who invented Quaaludes put that number on that pill for that reason? 714.
God.
Okay, back to Greenville.
No one cares. You're annoying.
That almost sounded a little bit like Steve.
Jesus is going to be more powerful than you. You're going to have legs. If I take some 87 bucks worth, my wife's going suspended. I'll see you in court, Mr. Bixby, and I'll pray for you in the meantime.
I'll pray
for
you.
You're going to fucking lose.
You're going to fucking lose.
There was the little icing swirl on top of the cupcake, Bob. I'm going to pray for you.
I'm going to pray for you.
Oh, my dear, sweet, merciful Jesus. I don't know. I just...
I'm not being disorderly. You're being disorderly. Jesus is more powerful than you.
Apparently that question was, presumably she had a valid operator's ID. Maybe the thing about not blocking your back windshield wasn't on her test or wasn't in her booklet, or maybe the pages were stuck together. Well, it makes me.
Oh, and by the way, I just got this across the wire. Worldwide, we've crossed 20 million infections.
Well, there you go. And we've got, what, 5 million of them? 6 million of them now.
Yeah.
There are 5 million.
5.2, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, you've got a recommendation from John in PA.
Okay.
On Amazon Prime, it's a three segment miniseries called The ABC Murders. Excellent miniseries, John says.
I will check it out. I've got it on my list. And by the way, that I watched the season finale of Perry Mason last night. If you've got HBO, Porn Family, fire up the new HBO Max app, which replaces the HBO Go app that most of you might be familiar with. It's only 8 episodes. It's quite good.
Yeah, it grew on me.
Yeah, the first few episodes were a little slow, but I'm telling you, I'm going to rewatch it in the coming week because it was some damn fine television.
What did you think of John Lithgow's son playing John Lithgow's son?
I didn't know that was him.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
I think his name is Ian Lithgow. Yeah. All right, we're out of here. Idea. We're out of here, Scott. You have yourself
a good
evening.
Well, listen.
Head on. It's still early there. You got time to get down to the market and get you some goat.
Well, I'll tell you what. After today's program, it makes me glad to be a listener and a supporter of this program, and I encourage all of the Horn family, kick in a couple of bucks, because it's great radio, some of the best conversations and content and information anywhere on any dial. So there.
Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you very kindly.
All right, and I will get my joy of cooking and see what they've got for goat, because I don't want to just throw something together.
No, don't get out. No, that's way too old. Just get online, look up goat recipes.
Okay, and get curry. Can't go wrong with curry. Okay, man, take care.
All right, later. See ya.
See ya.
And that's our buddy Scott, and that's the program. Fantastic conversation. All over the place, and I suspect there will probably be an outbreak of goat tasting in the Horn Family Community Congregation among the curious and adventuresome. So thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to Jeremy this evening, right at the top of the program. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you to all our subscribers. Thank you to all of you who a la carte, Patreon, PayPal, what have you, keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. For the overnight crew, we got $195 to go to finish today. We're looking at $395 for tomorrow. Be great if we could knock that down some. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live, who explained earlier, by the way, Brother Deacon Asa did, the folks at Popcorn Factory did not botch Nimrata Haley's delivery. It just takes a long time to ship it from the imaginary country of Bonomo. Indeed. So, thanks also to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Stay safe, y'all. Be well. Stay home if you can. If you can't, maintain your social distance. Wear your masks, wear your gloves, and if you see somebody hollering about communism in Greenville, South Carolina, avoid them like the plague, because they are. Later, y'all.